Want to remind you, too, if you're an unhappy timeshare owner, you went on a vacation, you're having the time of your life, somebody says you can duplicate this every year for the rest of your life, and then you never end up going back. And then you realize, there are other nice places I could go to, and I could better use that money, but every year you got to pay the maintenance fees and whatever other fees associated with it. You wish you never did it. Well, there's a way out, thanks to my friends at Lone Star Transfer, Brian and Karen. They run a family-owned business. They will make sure that your experience is a pleasant one. They will get you out of your timeshare legally, ethically, and quickly. I have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and this is what they do. Don't let another year go by and you're paying all this money for a timeshare you're never going to use. Now, two ways to get them. Online at LoneStarTransfer.com, all right? Or give my friends a call, no obligation. Call #250 on your mobile, keyword timeshare. Just hit #250 on your mobile phone, say the keyword timeshare, or just go to LoneStarTransfer.com. All right, glad you're with us. Happy Monday. And write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to join us. President makes his very first veto as the President of the United States. And some of the people that were at that ceremony, angel moms and dads, you know, permanent separation people that nobody seems in the media is ever willing to talk about. They're going to join us. Geraldo and Dan Bongino debate a bunch of issues later on in the program. And we have got a lot of deep state news. There's now going to be an avalanche of information cascading down at a rate that it's going to be tough to keep up with, as we've now seen in the last week with Bruce Orr's closed door testimony released, Lisa Page's closed door testimony released, Peter Strzok's closed door testimony released, and John McCain's aide, his testimony released. And I got to tell you, one of the more interesting things, I'm keeping an eye on this. I don't have more information yet, but Nellie Orr, you know, if you listen and Fusion GPS, Devin Nunes is doubtful that Christopher Steele even wrote the majority of this dossier. And they just need, we're using Steele to launder the information so it could, you know, come from somewhere, somebody else. But if that's the case, what we're beginning to believe and what my sources are telling me, we need a little more time to vet this. I'm just keeping you in the loop of what we're investigating now, not what we've confirmed, is that a lot of this information in the phony dossier that Hillary paid for and that the DNC paid for, et cetera, is likely to have come from Russia. Yeah, which is even more despicable considering the witch hunt we've been through now for almost 3 years that began in July of 2016. That's when it started. And remember, we learned through Page and Strzok's testimony last week that after 9 months investigating this, before the appointment of Mueller, they found no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, not even a single bit of it. The fact that there's been no interest at all in the special counsel's office, none, zero, in what we now know is a paid-for dossier by Hillary Clinton, full of Russian lies, disseminated to the American people before the election, impact the election results, and even worse than that, used as the bulk of information in these FISA applications, when and they withheld purposely that Hillary paid for this. They withheld, you know, they presented it as if it was verified and corroborated. Bruce Orr told everybody in August it's not verified. It's not corroborated. Steele hates President Trump and is invested in him losing and that Hillary paid for it. That was August 2016. They go to these FISA judges with an application, the bulk of information, the dossier, which we will be getting. And in the dossier, in the application, they say the dossier is true. James Comey signs that original FISA warrant. That's October 2016. January 2016, Trump Tower, President-elect Trump, says, I need to talk to you alone. There's this dossier out there that's salacious, but it's not verified. Did James Comey testify in October that it was verified when he signed the FISA application so they could use the dossier as a that's not verified as a means of spying on the Trump campaign and getting into all things Trump, again, to influence the election? I mean, it's all now beginning to come down. The bigger revelation last week is Strzok and Page saying, yeah, the Attorney General of Barack Obama is up to her eyeballs in all of this. And that they knew that the indictment, there would never be an indictment of Hillary Clinton on the Espionage Act or, of course, the email issue and the deletions and obstruction, because all the people that worked at the Department of Justice that overstepped their bounds and authority and ripped the investigation, a lot of it, and made every decision about the investigation from the FBI. Now, at that point, the FBI upper echelon had ripped it out of the hands of the field agents that would normally do this type of work. So everybody that hated Trump ended up controlling the entire process. And, you know, if Mueller wanted to get to Russia collusion, well, what about the Russian lies that were used to as the basis of applications to lie to FISA court judges in a conspiracy to deny not only an American citizen his constitutional rights, but also on a more profound level to impact and influence the 2016 election, the very thing he's supposed to be mandated to be looking into. That's somewhat shocking to me. You know, so we'll watch all of this. Now, we're all waiting for the FISA abuse report from the Inspector General Horowitz. I imagine he's waiting until Mueller finishes. I mean, last time it took this guy 18 months. He's got 600 employees working for him. I don't know why he worked so pathetically slow. But he did give us a lot of the information we have today when he's the one that found the page and struck text messages. Now we knew that they hated Donald Trump in every way imaginable. Mueller, you know, much of the important part of the insurance policy is all of this, meaning the dossier. Mueller's been running and controlling everything at the DOJ until Barr got there. Now Horowitz, if his hands were tied, you know, Mueller maybe has been keeping things from him. They won't be tied much longer. And we need to hear from these FISA court judges themselves. I mean, this is going to make a 180 turn. It's going to be faster than it'll make your head spin. And it's all going to point in one direction, is that it's been corrupt, a witch hunt from the beginning, and the evidence of abuse of power, corruption, and Russian influence was on the other side. And the script has been flipped. There's a new poll out, mainstream media actually, revealing the public distrust of Mueller's growing. USA Today, amid signs that Mueller's investigation into the Russian election interference may be near its conclusions, a USA Today Suffolk University poll finds that trust in Mueller has eroded. Half of Americans now agree with the president and his contention that this is, and he has been, a victim of a witch hunt. 50% agree with the president that he's been subjected to more investigations than previous presidents, and it's all political. Pretty sad. Now, one bit of breaking news that I'm finding really fascinating is, you know, remember, the one revelation that came out last week was about Lisa Page. And Lisa Page said, oh, there's some type of file within the FBI that verified the Steele dossier. Well, I want to see that file, because that file is impossible to have been verified. Why? Because even the supposed author, Christopher Steele himself, bought and paid for with funneled money through Perkins Coie, through Fusion GPS, if he even is the author, well, he has sworn under oath. He has no idea if it is true. That it's raw intelligence. And we know that he used Russian sources, probably often single sources. Or was he being lied to and propagandized on purpose by Russian agents, again, that wanted to impact the election? Anyway, so Christopher Steele, we now find out, which gets very interesting, well, what did he use for his sources beyond his Russian contacts? Now, Fox News reported on Saturday that Steele, testifying in a defamation lawsuit filed against a Russian entrepreneur, said that he obtained information about this particular guy on something called CNN iReport. Now, CNN iReport, it's not really CNN, but it is fake news just like CNN. Now, apparently, is out of service. But CNN iReport was an invitation to members of the public to submit their own content to the website. In other words, you know, these keyboard warrior people in their underwear. You know, well, I got this information. He used that as a means of putting together his dossier. You got to be kidding me. Anyway, the views on this, and even they have a disclaimer, the views on content on this site are of the Eye Report. CNN makes no guarantees that the content or the coverage about the Eye Report. How could they? They don't know who these people are. Anybody can put anything up there. CNN is known to have known about the contents of the dossier, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, that's pretty nuts. You know, Devin Nunes is going to join us on Hannity tonight, confirming that Central Spygate element, and he's really beginning, as others have been telling me now for a while, and I had a hard time believing it, that Steele was not the only author of the dossier. And it's looking more and more like, you know, we need to dig deeper into the role of Nellie Orr, who's the wife of Bruce Orr, who at the time, he's been demoted twice, you know, worked for Fusion GPS, which is a conflict in and of itself. And, you know, Mueller says some of these probes continue, et cetera, et cetera. There's been no evidence. It's interesting that Andrew Weissman is getting the hell out of there as quickly as he can. But, you know, you want to know about the real collusion? That was between Obama's Department of Justice and the FBI. And I think one of the biggest things we learned is that the Attorney General Lynch, the same woman that met with Bill Clinton days before the decision on the tarmac, some Phoenix FBO, you know, they're having a 45-minute conversation about their grandchildren. Seems a little too coincidental to me. I'm not sure if I could talk about my grandkids for 45 minutes, but apparently they can, if you believe them. And that was just days before Loretta Lynch was in charge of making the decision about whether or not to prosecute his wife. More than inappropriate. And when you have the testimony of Lisa Page, well, now we learn that the same Loretta Lynch that told James Comey the Clinton investigation was no investigation at all. It was only a matter. And Lisa Page saying, we knew at the FBI when they were taking this out of our hands and not letting us do our job, and they were micromanaging it, and they were making all the big decisions, not us, and they even allowed Hillary Clinton to be interviewed with two other people in the room. That never happens. And Peter Strzok confirmed the same. And now we're learning that, okay, so all of this was run by the Attorney General, Obama's Attorney General. Well, what did Obama know about this? You know, where are the emails and the text messages from former Attorney General Loretta Lynch? I'm sure they've been bleach pipped by now. So we'll have to wait, watch, and see all that happens here, and we'll get to all of that. But I'm going to tell you something. This is just the beginning. We're learning a lot about Democratic candidates. You got New Jersey's largest city now planning to test a universal basic income program. I'm going to explain what that means. Bozo O'Rourke is in a lot of trouble. He had the worst weekend and of any presidential that you could ever have as a newly announced presidential candidate. I'm going to outline all of that for you. We have a North Carolina county now declaring itself a sanctuary county for gun owners. I guess things work in both directions. We'll have the latest on what happened in New Zealand and Democratic blame for New Zealand. It's unbelievable. Left-wing radicals, you know, blaming anybody and everybody but the person responsible. You know, there are more than 34 million American smokers. Now, I'd bet that finding a satisfying alternative to cigarettes is at the top of your list if you're a smoker. Look, I've been there before. But after many years of smoking, I finally made the switch to Juul. There's no more worrying about the way my clothes smell, worrying about what people are gonna say. With Juul, everything is so much easier. Now, Juul is a vaporizer that contains nicotine for a satisfying transition. When I found Juul, it was a complete game changer. Now, Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to cigarettes. From its simple to use interface to its clean technology, well, Juul has no cigarette ash, odor, or mess. So if you're one of the 34 million adults who smoke, know that there is an alternative to cigarettes. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's nothing like you've tried, visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. And warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical.
All right, really, really bizarre news about Robert Francis Beto Bozo O'Rourke. Now, this is pretty amazing. Imagine any media outlet doing this to Donald Trump. Reuters reported late on Friday night that the reporter who broke the story about Robert Francis O'Rourke belonging to a hacker group had the story for 2 years, made an agreement to sit on the story until after O'Rourke's Senate race against Ted Cruz. Then the report, published Friday, documented O'Rourke's involvement with a hacker group named Cult of the Dead Cow. Included multiple past writings from O'Rourke, some of which were described as disturbing. After more than a year of reporting, well, Joseph Mann persuaded O'Rourke to talk on the record in an interview in 2017, in late 2017. O'Rourke acknowledged that he was a member of the group on the understanding the information would not be made public until after a Senate race against Ted Cruz. The writer for Reuters said that he learned about his involvement in the group after he decided to write about a hacking story, which he called the most interesting, influential hacking group in history. And while I was looking into the Cult of the Dead Cow, I found out that they had a member who was a sitting member of Congress. I didn't know which one, and I figured out which one. And the members of the group wouldn't talk to me about who it was. They wouldn't confirm that it was this person unless I promised that I would write about it, wouldn't write about it till after the November election. He says he approached O'Rourke for an interview about the book and told O'Rourke that the book was going to publish after November and your Senate race is over. O'Rourke agreed to give the interview. Some of his old writings were discovered in an online discussion in a forum that started with Taco Land. One piece of the writing O'Rourke was especially troubling as he described mowing down children in a car. I'm not making this up. Yahoo News had this up. You know, if we're going to go into Brett Kavanaugh's high school days, let's go into Bozo's. Archived versions of his writings and, you know, and under an alias, psychedelic warlord, including one that criticized some women as sluts, mocked them for having violent boyfriends, suggested the way to deal with these women is to call them completely ugly or inform Nazi skinheads, I guess, in your area and go on from there. And he says another one when he was written as 15, you know, as a piece of fiction. I was driving home from work. I noticed two children crossing the street and they were happy to be free of their troubles. The happiness was mine by right. I had earned it. As I neared the young ones, I put all my weight on my right foot. Hit the accelerator. Simply Safe Home Security. This is a truly good, honest, great company. And you don't find many of those anymore. And Simply Safe is 100% committed to helping you fear less in your home. Now, they'll protect your home 24/7, and they really take care of you. Now, Simply Safe CEO started the company from the ground up right at his kitchen counter. Now, it's the fastest growing home security company in the entire country, and they protect millions of Americans every single day. But they still run like a small company with the same values that they started with. And that's why Simply Safe has no contracts, no hidden fees, no installation fees. Now, the system is wireless and practically invisible in your home. And you can order it online, just a few clicks, and you'll see that it feels good to fear less. Just go to simplysafe.com/Sean to get 10% off. That's simplysafe.com/Sean. Free shipping, free returns, and 10% off because you listen to my show. simplysafe.com/Sean. The more fascinating it is, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Let me go back and read this more slowly. So just to reiterate my earlier point, you have a Reuters reporter who knew that O'Rourke is part of this Cult of the Dead Cow, a hacking group, and apparently one of the biggest and more influential hacking group. And he agreed to sit on the story until after the race between Ted Cruz and Beto took place for the Senate race. Anyway, so this Reuters reporter persuaded O'Rourke to go on the record with the agreement that he would hold it back until after the November 2018 election. Well, I kind of call this cheating. What reporter's ever going to agree to, you know, hold back a big story like that? Anyway, learned about the Cult of the Dead Cow, found out it was a member of Congress in it, found out it was Beto, Robert Francis. They wouldn't confirm it until they he promised not to write about it until after the November election. I don't imagine if a Fox News person did that, not opinion, but a news person did that. I mean, I can only imagine the freak out that would occur on such a big story like that. You know, he's apparently has this online discussion forum that he's a part of called Taco Land. And one particular piece of writing is really weird and scary. But anyway, one of the things from O'Rourke was written when he's 15, short, disturbing piece of fiction. One day as I was driving home from work, I noticed two children crossing the street. They were happy, happy to be free from their troubles. This happiness was mine by right. I had earned it in my dreams. By the way, what's the disclaimer?
It's 3:30. Kids are in the car. Might just be nice to have a little disclaimer.
Oh, yeah. All right. If your kids are in the car, moms and dads, you know, hang in there. As I neared the young ones, I put all of my weight on my right foot, keeping the accelerator pedal on the floor until I heard the crashing of the two children on the hood. And then the sharp cry of pain from one of the two. I was so fascinated for a moment that after I had stopped my vehicle, I just sat in a daze, sweet visions filling my head. Okay. You got to be kidding me, right? Normal people don't think like this. Yahoo on Friday reported other O'Rourke writings, archived versions of his writings attributed to his alias, Psychedelic Warlord. You know, and as I was beginning to describe earlier, including one that criticizes women as, quote, sluts, mocks them for having, quote, violent boyfriends, suggesting a way to deal with these women was to call them completely ugly or inform Nazi skins in your area that they had AIDS. One text file that was dated 1989, when he was 16 or 17, Psychedelic Warlord is back, describing a new creature, the ultra-trendy, in an over-the-top sarcastic tone. Ultra-trendies are usually the scene sluts, quote, that many of the menfolk admire so. They show up, they get drunk with the band, tell the lead singer, I really like your music, and I think it's a lot like the Sex Pistols, so you want to... Psychedelic Warlord Beto. Do we have to change his name now to Psychedelic Warlord? Or should we keep it Robert Francis Beto Bozo? What do you think?
I would like to use neither.
This is a really... You have to have a messed up head to do this. One of these... You know, it sounds like... You ever see, like, the writings of these crazy kids that, you know, commit these horrible acts? That seems like a weird mindset to me. One of those other pieces, Psychedelic Warlord Robert Francis O'Rourke writes that from the perspective of a narrator who confronts a feeling of boredom and aimlessness by going on a killing spree, including the one that I just mentioned, dated 1988, continues with describing the murder as an act of love, saying it was the feeling it provoked was simple ecstasy. I had killed nearly 38 people by the time of my 23rd birthday. Each one was more fulfilling than the last, he writes, Psychedelic Warlord Robert Francis O'Rourke. Writings included some youthful attempts at profane humor, such as a 1988 poem, Psychedelic Warlord, crafted by the Cult of the Dead Cow. I can't even read this. You know, I just can't. I mean, it's pretty amazing. This is your media. This is who they are. You don't think this is an example? Think any media person for any conservative ever running, any Republican ever running, would give this type of protection to that candidate? No, never. You know, did they ever vet Obama? No, they never vetted Obama. Did they ever tell you his atrocious record after? No, they never did that either. We're going to get into the president's first veto coming up later in the program, because that's really important. So apparently people are mad when you say Robert Francis O'Rourke, which is his first name, and Beto, and I don't know where Beto came from, or psychedelic warlord, or Bozo is what I've been calling him, is the latest far-left Democrat throwing his hat in the ring. So he's a three-term congressman, most famous for his love of skateboarding, wanting to tear down walls, losing to Senator Cruz. Asked by the media, Nancy Pelosi could not name a single legislative accomplishment of Robert Francis O'Rourke. She wasn't alone. Texas Democrat chair also struggled to describe any Beto accomplishments.
I mean, but Nancy Pelosi was asked today about his biggest accomplishment, and she couldn't really name one, even though he served in the House for a brief time, admittedly. But you're telling me he's an honest politician. That's his biggest accomplishment in life?
Well, the entire time that he served in the United States House of Representatives, the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives.
Sure.
They wouldn't allow anything to pass that was sponsored by a Democrat. So the fact that he was unable to get major
legislation. Okay, so name something else. I'm not even pinning it on Congress. I asked you his biggest accomplishment. So what has he done in life?
Asking me about, you know.
Okay, well, let me broaden it out and be fair.
He's been a United States Congressman. Okay. He was a city council member.
So what did he get done?
He got a lot done. He talked about the issues that were important to the people of the state of Texas.
Got a lot done. Just can't name a thing that he got done. I can't name one thing. Wow. But, you know, he's like most of the candidates we see. Far left socialist. And that's just pretty much who he is. It's like it's not hard to figure out who these liberal Democrats are. It's really not. And he had to apologize Friday night. He was in Iowa and made some joke. It was not a good weekend for him. Anyway, launched his bid, I guess, on Friday. And then Thursday, they put out the video, remarks recorded on Political Party Live in Cedar Rapids. Then he begged for gasoline so he could drive around the city. And the comments triggered complaints from many Democratic activists and operatives, many of them women, that female candidates could never similarly joke about their roles of raising children. Not only will I not say that again, but I'll be more thoughtful going forward in the way that I talk about our marriage and also the way in which I acknowledge the truth of the criticisms I have enjoyed white privilege. And he pointed to his ability to walk away from two arrests as a young man without any serious consequences as an example. So, yes, I think the criticism's right on my ham-handed attempt to try and highlight the fact that Amy has the lion's share of the burden in our family, that she actually works but is the primary parent in our family, especially when I served in Congress, especially when I was on the campaign trail, should have also been a moment for me to acknowledge that is far too often the case, not just in politics, but life in general. Hope I've been in some instances, I hope, as I have been in some instances, part of the problem. I can now be part of the solution. He adds he's the only candidate from the U.S.-Mexico border. Says he's a beneficiary of white privilege. He went on, didn't go on any length about that. I don't know what he's thinking or doing here. But he is pretty much in sync with the modern liberal leftist Democratic Party. Some people got mad at, I guess, the RNC tweeted out a picture on St. Paddy's Day because he has a mugshot. I guess he was picked up for a DUI. Now, that situation was really weird because he was accused of running away from the scene of an accident from that scene. He even tried to flee the scene before the police arrived, and he was arrested for driving under the influence, which is a lot worse. And anyway, so they put up a picture of, you know, with like a leprechaun hat for St. Patrick's Day yesterday. Please drink responsibly. You say, and then, look, I'm Irish. I don't find it offensive. Do you find that you're Irish, Linda? You find it offensive?
It takes a lot to offend me.
It takes a lot to offend me. Everyone's so sensitive. You know, they used to tell the joke about, oh, what's an Irish 7-course meal, a 6-pack, and a potato? Ha, ha, ha. I'm not offended by it. I think we're way too uptight. But you know what?
I miss the days of George Carlin.
Oh, George Carlin. Who recently, Pat? Don Rickles, Joan Rivers. Remember we had Joan Rivers on the show? I think we had to bleep her 15 times in one appearance.
It's just you can't even be funny anymore.
You can't. It's just the only one that gets away with it is Howard Stern. and he's like grandfathered
even
in on a level.
He's careful now.
I haven't noticed that he's careful at all when I heard him.
I have.
Well, I usually get to hear him like the best of 2 weeks around Christmas when I drive my car a lot. And I'm like, oh, this guy can say anything he wants. Which, by the way, I don't want to change. I think it's good. You know, but you can't do that. You just, nobody else can get away with it. And it's just, everyone's so uptight. If I mean, I could feign outrage and act like I really cared that somebody told a joke or please drink responsibly in the leprechaun hat on Bozo, but I would be faking it. I would be lying. I'm not offended. But Reuters hiding Beto's hacking story. Wow. What does that mean for Reuters? Isn't that a campaign contribution on their part? Imagine if it was a reporter at Fox News that did this for Donald Trump. Forget it. There's a PJ Media piece, so Rourke's gaffetastic day. And he went through all of the comments that he made on the campaign. His first swing through Iowa, you know, marred by a joke about his wife. It's just, well, everyone's really, but the guy's just an idiot. And you really can't, you can't get away from the fact, and his policies are insane. Can't get away from that fact either. New Jersey, this is interesting. Their largest city plans to test whether universal basic income is feasible, making it the latest government to flirt with a program that would guarantee income for residents whether or not they have a job. Newark Mayor Ross Baraka announced the decision late last week to create a task force and a pilot program to study whether the program is possible. Quote, we believe in universal basic income, especially in a time where studies have shown that families have a crisis of just $400 a month, may experience a setback that may be difficult or even impossible to recover from. And then, of course, the Newark mayor went on to say, and, you know, adding that one third of the city still lives in poverty. Fox 5 New York said the mayor did not release any details of the plan. You know, one thing they on the New Deal, they never want to explain how they're going to pay for it. Paying for it's irrelevant when your life is at stake. There's a joke, by the way. House Democrats launched an investigation into the media bias at Fox News. Like, really? Sorry, that's, you know. Anyway, Ocasio-Cortez's unfavorable rating is skyrocketing, and she's getting pissed and blaming Fox News in the meantime. Universal basic income program, whether you work or don't work. Wow. Where are we going to get the money to pay for all of this? Oh, you know what today is? It is in New York City public schools. It's, what do they call it? Meatless Mondays? I'm urging every kid in New York City public schools to head to McDonald's immediately upon leaving school today and make up for the whatever garbage they fed you with your government healthy food. Wow. By the way, isn't it one of the greatest things ever invented? A Wendy's single with cheese, a quarter pounder with cheese, French fries, and a Coke. Love it. I don't eat it much, but when I do, oh, it's so good. So delicious. Dan Bongino, Geraldo, next.
As president, the protection of the nation is my highest duty. Yesterday, Congress passed a dangerous resolution that, if signed into law, would put countless Americans in danger, very grave danger. The Democrat-sponsored resolution would terminate vital border security operations by revoking the national emergency issued last month. It is definitely a national emergency. Rarely have we had such a national emergency. Therefore, to defend the safety and security of all Americans, I will be signing and issuing a formal veto of this reckless resolution, and that's what it was.
All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity show, the president's first veto over the issue of his emergency declaration, which now allows him, as past presidents have done, to use, well, unused funds from the Defense Department and elsewhere as a means of funding the border wall. We have covered this extensively You know, for example, I've been making the argument, and it's not really one that needs to be made, but we have legislatively 10 U.S.C. 284 that the president has the authority to complete, quote, the construction of roads and fences and obstacles and installation of lighting to block drug smuggling corridors across international boundaries of the United States. And the primary smuggling quarters into the corridors into the U.S. are at our southern border. 90% of heroin. Heroin responsible for 300 deaths each and every week in the U.S. How is that not a national emergency? Now, we're going to talk to some angel families at the bottom of the hour. And then you have sanctuary cities. You have criminal illegal immigrants. Well, doesn't matter in terms of, you know, now you have states and cities literally aiding and abetting in future crimes and ignoring federal law. But the bottom line is the president keeps fighting for what he made, a promise. I don't think they're going to override this veto. I don't think they can override this veto. Joining us now, Dan Bongino, Fox News contributor, former NYPD officer, Secret Service agent, author of the bestseller Spygate, Geraldo Rivera, Fox News legal analyst, author of the bestseller The Geraldo Show. You know, Geraldo, I think you've come around a lot on this issue, and I think you've come to see that the president, especially during the shutdown, was being pretty reasonable. Democrats, you know, in the second term of Obama, they were more than willing to fund a border wall. They say repeatedly they care about DACA and they care about Dreamers. The president put that on the table. They didn't even go bother meet with him. Similarly, the president, you know, made offers about getting the government open because they said they cared about furloughed workers. They didn't care about them enough to go sit down with the president. So they had probably a comprehensive deal on the table with all the things they said they wanted, and they turned it down.
Well, the thing is that really irks me, Sean, great to be with you and Brother Dan, is the fact that the president has broad discretion when it comes to national security. In his view, there's a national emergency. I think the Congress should have given deference to his point of view. I have absolutely no problem with his using funds from other areas to build some portions of the wall where the experts tell him and me and us where it's necessary. I believe that the Democrats drew a line in the sand, a wall, if you will, because they wanted to hurt the president politically. It had nothing to do with the practical aspects of what do you do to stop drug smuggling? What do you do to stop human smuggling? What do you do to secure the border? It had all to do with giving the president first and the government shutdown in December a defeat. And I think that that is what is at work right now. And because they're playing politics, I have absolutely no problem with the problem with the president doing an end run around them, Sean.
Well, they're not going to overturn the veto. They don't have the votes to. So that bill's going to stand, and he will do what every other president, starting with Jimmy Carter, has done. There are still 33 national emergencies from past presidents, including Obama, on the books today. So it's not like something that has been manufactured by Donald Trump. I would argue not only 10 U.S.C., which I just cited, but I also would argue 284, but I'd argue that constitutionally, as the commander-in-chief, if you have 4,000 homicides in 2 years and 30,000 sexual assaults in 2 years and 100,000 violent assaults in 2 years and 90% of heroin and fentanyl crossing the borders with cartels and gang members, how do you say that's not a manufactured crisis? Dan Bongino.
Yeah, well, you don't, Sean. I mean, you just stated the numbers clear as day. I mean, any rational, sane, reasonable person, what's happening at the border is a crisis. Sean, I don't know if you saw even the Washington Post, right, the compost of all places, ran a story this weekend about this new scheme to smuggle illegals into the country. And the new scheme is this. Get ready, Sean. It's very complicated. They actually bus you up to the border, and they just drop you off where you turn yourself in. I'm not making that up. Like, that's the scheme. Like, obviously, you can sense the dripping sarcasm. But because we have effectively no border anymore due to Flores, we have created the Democrats, not President Trump, who's trying to stop this. The Democrats have essentially created an emergency. There's no doubt about this amongst reasonable people. I am not making that story up, by the way. That's from the Washington Post. They are now taking buses, people not cleared to be in the country. We have no idea who these people are. They are dropping them off the board. They're not doing stash houses anymore where they used to stash illegals and then they'd wait to make a run when they thought they could get past Border Patrol. They're not even doing that. They're just turning themselves in at the border. Now, explain to me again with a straight face to our listeners out there, anyone not on the conservative side of this issue, which is the right side, how that's not not an emergency. I'm open to hearing.
Yeah. All right. Let me push back.
I could push back, Dan. I think that one of the good things, and I saw this in McAllen where the wall construction is underway. I'm okay with the smugglers. There's going to be illegal crossings of the border. At least when they seek asylum, you know that someone's going to at least interview them and see if they're on the Interpol list of the most 10 most wanted criminals. It's better than them just sneaking across on their belly someplace disappearing into the American system.
You know, I love when you call me Brother Dan, because you are Brother Geraldo.
By the way, whenever he says Brother Dan, that means he's about to hit you right over the head with a 2x4.
You're right. That's his trick. He butters you up because he knows I like him. Geraldo, but you're a smart guy. How can you not figure this out? If you claim asylum, there has to be some stipulation in the law. They're going to have to change the law that you are going to have to do it exclusively from the country you're claiming asylum from. Because what's happening now is people from Honduras and Guatemala who claim they're claiming asylum to escape danger, right? We can all agree that's what that is.
Right.
They're leaving for Mexico. Okay, so wait, let me finish. So you're out of Guatemala now. So claim asylum in Mexico. No, we don't want to claim asylum in Mexico. We want to come to the United States. But you just said you were claiming asylum. You didn't say you wanted to come to the United States. Those are not the same thing. You are going to have to claim asylum.
One political observation. Look at the 12 Republican senators that just stabbed the president in the back. Of the 12, 11 are not up for re-election. 11 are not up for re-election, so they're not going to be primaried by another GOP Trump supporter candidate. So there's no courage at all for the Mitt Romneys of the world who oppose the president on the emergency declaration. Susan Collins, as far as I know, is the only one of the 12 GOP senators who is up for election. She's the only one that had the courage to stand by her principles. And also, let me say this, there's not going to be any asylum law changes in this Congress as long as the House is controlled by the Democrats. You're never going to get the law that
you're making. My point, not yours, that the Democrats
are not
interested. No, but
here's what you do.
That's exactly the point I'm making.
Surge the judges. Surge the judges to the border. Surge the infrastructure.
Geraldo, how are you going to have judges for 100,000 people a month? That's insane. How are you going to do that? Can you, Judge Geraldo? Hold on. I was an agent. I was a federal. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm just trying to explain to you something. When I was a federal agent in the Secret Service, we had 3,000 agents across the whole country. You know how many credit card fraud cases we turned down because we didn't have enough people, enough judges? You think 100,000 people crossing a month, you're going to surge the judges? What are you going to do? How many judges are you going to hire? A million? I mean, Geraldo, the numbers don't work. Like, you got to think this stuff through. I mean, come on, guy. You got to think about this rationally.
You got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. You got to bring order to the border. It's already, the president has already done a pretty darn good job in terms of enforcement, turning away bad people. I think that the situation is better now than it was a couple of years ago. Even though they're trying harder, they're getting snagged at a higher rate. I think you got to deal with the reality that exists, Dan. That's my whole thing. Here's a president that is besieged.
He's besieged
by a media that is so hateful that anything he does is construed against him. They're blaming him for mass murders on the other side of the world. So I think that he's got to speak up and speak out, and he's made this emergency declaration. We support him. We back him. Congress will not be able to override this veto. Let's go forward. Take the small incremental victories. You're not going to get the sweeping reforms that you ask for.
Well, then listen, you're just acknowledging the fact that what I said in the beginning is true, that the Democrats want open borders. They're not in this for any victory at all. They don't want to change the system. And can I take issue with one thing, too? Listen, I get it that there were 12 senators from the Republican side, but we can't put them all in the same basket. Some are clearly just politicians, but you know, Rand Paul and Mike Lee, they're constitutionalists. They're not objecting to the president on the fact that this is an emergency. It's a funding mechanism. I think that's why the president was pretty clear. And he said this himself, President Trump, who I support, and I agree with him on the emergency, but he said he did not pressure people. He had them vote their conscience, because there are some people out there who have been consistent on this issue, Democrat or Republican. So I agree with those. Some of them are political backstabbing.
I agree.
But not all.
I agree. I'm a Rand Paul fan myself. I like the guy. And
let me move on to a different issue. So over the weekend, we have Reuters reporting that they had a reporter broke a story about Bozo, Beto O'Rourke, or Robert Francis O'Rourke, belonging to a hacker group They had the story for 2 years. They agreed to sit on it until the race with Ted Cruz was over. And it documented O'Rourke's involvement in a hacker group named Cult of the Dead Cow. Included multiple past writing. I'm not making this up. I don't know why you're laughing.
I know. That's why I'm laughing.
Multiple past writings from O'Rourke, some of which were pretty disturbing. After more than a year of reporting on this, they persuaded O'Rourke to talk on the record. The interview took place in 2017. O'Rourke acknowledged he was a member of the group on the understanding that the information would not be made public until the Senate race is over with Ted Cruz. How does Reuters get to make that acknowledgement? You know, when do they run defense? Because that obviously would have had a big impact on the people of Texas in that race. So that's their campaign contribution to what?
Think about this, right? Is this story not just a microcosm of the entire media universe? So Donald Trump,
the media
runs stories about Donald Trump that they completely made up. They fabricated, put them in a New York Times about this whole collusion hoax and reported it like it was fact. Yet they get a story. Beto acknowledges he's a Cult of the Dead Cow member. And then the media doesn't laugh. I mean, that's why it's so funny. Like you said, that I'm
letting you know. He should have joined something with a snappier name.
Oh, my gosh. So ridiculous. That's the media.
The Dead Cow? I mean, you have to judge his.
Well, let me ask both of you this. Now, I'm Irish. You know what an Irish 7-course meal is, right, Geraldo?
Guinness, what?
No, a six-pack and a potato, right? Right? Now, I can make that joke. I'm actually my...
You can make that joke. I can't make that joke.
No, but the funny thing, is, I did a DNA test. Who did it? Our ancestry did it. And actually, I'm one of the few people. I was 100% British Isle. In other words, Irish. All four of my grandparents came from Ireland. Anyway, I guess the RNC sent out a picture and they put like an Erangel Bra leprechaun hat on Beto and put up a picture when he got a DUI.
I didn't like that.
Well, why didn't you like it? Because it stereotypes Irish?
Stereotypes Irish, exactly. If you're going to put it, if it was a
Puerto
Rican,
why does it not bother me?
You did the same thing I would do.
I'm going to be very blunt. It doesn't bother me at all. I know my immigrant grandparents.
Don't that kind of stuff. I think that it, even though it makes you snicker, no matter what, it's hard not to grin about it or say, oh, you know, give a guffaw. But there's got to be some decency. If the RNC of all organizations is stooping to that, then Trump is open season on the president.
If anything, it wasn't that funny. I think my joke was much funnier.
Well, I remember Bloomberg made a similar joke.
Yeah, he did. He got in trouble for that.
Defended him.
I don't take that seriously. I know other people do. I don't. Just relax. Everyone needs to laugh a little. I thought Don Rickles was funny as hell, and he picked on everybody.
But let's
show on the civility thing. Geraldo, listen, I'm with you, man. But I'd love to return to civility, too. But let's be candid. You think the conservatives brought this about, this destructive politics? I mean, when the liberals want to return to civility and a nice whatever, Tip O'Neill, Reagan, alleged back and forth, and beers in the White House, which probably never happened anyway.
It's after
I'm
six.
Down like anyone else. But that ain't going to happen because the left isn't interested in any of that.
Okay, brother.
By the way, Geraldo, when are you moving back to New York? I mean, you've been living in Cleveland.
I'm here.
Are you here all week?
I'm here all week through Sunday.
Okay, that's awesome to hear. All right, Dan, we'll see you soon as well. Quick break, right back. Yeah. News roundup, information overload coming, and you're going to meet the angel moms and dad that were in the room in the Oval Office when the president vetoed the emergency spending bill that Congress voted down. They won't override the veto. He'll get the money straight ahead.
As president, the protection of the nation is my highest duty. Yesterday, Congress passed a dangerous resolution that, if signed into law, would put countless Americans in danger, very grave danger. The Democrat-sponsored resolution would terminate vital border security operations by revoking the national emergency issued last month. It is definitely a national emergency. Rarely have we had such a national emergency. Therefore, to defend the safety and security of all Americans, I will be signing and issuing a formal veto of this reckless resolution, and that's what it was.
You're talking about the mainstream media. Apparently, you made an effort to talk to CNN's Jim Acosta and interview yourself or a representative of the Angel Mom movement. What did he say?
Well, I called him out right after I got up, after the president left the podium in the Rose Garden. And I called him out on, first of all, calling him undocumented immigrants. They are illegal aliens by law. That's defined. It's not racist. And I called him out on always quoting that illegals commit less crimes than Americans. And I told him that we should have zero crime by illegal aliens. They shouldn't even be here. And my son's death was one too many. And he put on this Oscar-worthy performance, putting his hand on his heart and telling me how sorry he was for our loss and how CNN felt. And I called him out on not having us on. In 7 years, I've been on there twice. Some have never been on. And I told him I wasn't going to be his prop when he offered to stand behind him when he goes live and he will point to us. How disrespectful and just arrogant. And then when he called out that the president calls him fake news, I said, well, I have to agree with the president. He is. And he keeps proving that. So it was a beautiful moment that I still have to laugh about. And I gave him my business card and glad I didn't hold my breath because he hasn't called yet or contacted me.
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. The president's first veto, as we predicted, it will not be overridden. He will get to transfer the money. In other words, everything the president said he was going to do is going to get done. That was Sabine Durden talking about that moment in the Rose Garden with the president and Acosta being who Acosta is. And the president said, well, why don't you talk to them? I did not know they were on fake news CNN even once, so that was somewhat shocking. Anyway, Sabine, illegal immigrant from Germany, her son Dominic was struck and killed July 12, 2012, with an unlicensed pickup truck driving illegal immigrant with a history of drunk driving, made a wrong turn and struck Dominic's motorcycle. Laura Wilkerson is back with us. Her 18-year-old son, Joshua, brutally beaten, strangled, tortured to death by a young illegal immigrant. This goes back to 2010, November the 16th. And also with us, Marianne Mendoza. Her son, Brandon, was a Mesa police officer. He was killed on May 12, 2014, head-on collision with a man who authorities say was intoxicated and an immigrant in this country illegally. And both Brandon Mendoza and the other driver were killed in the crash. All three of these women were with the president when he signed the veto pushback against Congress to make sure this doesn't happen to any other kids in America. I know the people on the left and the media were obsessed about child separation. Well, this is a case of permanent separation. You know, it's almost mind-numbing to me that the media ignores, you know, they keep saying a manufactured crisis, but in a two-year period of time, there's 4,000 homicides against Americans by illegal immigrants, 30,000 sexual assaults by illegal immigrants against Americans. There's 100,000 violent assaults against Americans by illegal immigrants. Then you have the cartels and the gangs, and 90% of our heroin comes across that southern border. Well, we're losing 300 kids a week. And then, of course, when added now the new phenomenon that everybody tried to warn the Obama administration about, which is fentanyl, which is killing people at a faster rate than any other drug ever manufactured. And we all know what happened to my good friend Eric Bolling's son, Chase. I mean, he bought a Xanax on the street. Maybe he was feeling anxious and, you know, it was laced with fentanyl and he died that night, 19 years old. Anyway, Sabine, Laura, Marianne, thank you all for being with us. We appreciate your time. And again, our thoughts, our prayers go out to you. And how did you feel being there, Sabine, at this ceremony with the president? And what were your thoughts?
Hi, Sean. It's good to be back with you. I felt so honored and blessed to be invited to stand with our president and vice president in such a historic setting and historic event, because we elected this president to fight for Americans, not illegals. And the sad part is that the MSM media, the mainstream media, refuses to tell the truth to their viewers. That's why they are so oblivious, some of them, and don't believe what the president is doing is for their good as well.
They actually ignore these facts purposefully. Yeah. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. I've gotten to know all of you very well over the years, and many other angel families, moms and dads. And I was a little surprised. What did you say? You were invited on CNN how many times and how many years?
In 7 years, almost 7 years. I've been on CNN twice, and I was shocked that I was invited to MSNBC one time.
Okay, how many times have you been on my program and other Fox programs?
Oh, numerous times, too many to even remember, because Fox is pretty much the only voice we have to share our stories of our kids and our permanent separation, and something we shouldn't even have to talk about. No. We should enjoy life with our kids, our family members.
Well, the one thing I've gotten to know from all of you is that you've taken, I think, the hardest hit that anyone can take in life, and that is the death of their precious child. I've met people that have lost their kids, and they never, ever recover. They're never the same person. It's like their life was sucked out of them the minute they heard the news. All of you have taken all of that pain and all of that suffering, and you have redirected your attention and focus to make sure that other people don't have to live through the same thing. Laura, you and I have talked about that many times together.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me back. You know, that's our only hope. We know our kids aren't coming back, but our only hope is to save another family from the absolute, travesty of this. And it destroys life for you and your family. And there's so many ripples that go out. It's not just our immediate family, but it actually destroys us. And that's our only hope, is that no other family will go through it.
Yeah. Your son, Joshua, only 18 years old, his was particularly dark and evil. You know, he was beaten, he was kidnapped, he was strangled and tortured. Tell everybody what happened to your young son and who this person was that did this.
Yes, the young man that killed Joshua was 19, and he was here illegally from Belize. His parents had brought him here, I think, when he was about 10. And he asked Josh for a ride home from school, and Josh gave it to him. And for unbeknownst to us then, we realized now that he wanted to kill Josh to scrap his money for scrap his truck for some money. And he did just that. He hit him in the face first so that he couldn't fight back. And then he kneed him so hard in the stomach that it sliced Joshua's spleen. And Josh kept trying to get up off the ground. And he beat him in the head with a closet rod so hard it broke in four pieces. And then he proceeded to strangle him and let him go, see if he was still alive, over and over until he finally died. And then he tied him up like an animal and put a couple dollars worth of gasoline on Josh and set him on fire.
Wow. And what was the punishment in this case?
The punishment in this case was life, which means in Texas 30 years before parole. But right now in Texas, they are trying to pass legislation that will allow these killers to accrue good time. And if that were to pass, and if that's the case, then he will come up for parole much shorter than 30 years. And it's something we'll have to deal with. Families are re-victimized every time that someone comes up for parole, and you have to go down there and beg and plead, you know, to keep your killer in jail or your kid's killer in jail. And so it's a constant fight at either a state level or the federal level. It's constant battle for American citizens, and it just seems it's just unbelievable almost.
And Marianne, you like Sabine, you know, you had a son, who I'm sure you were very proud of. He was a Mesa police officer. He was in this head-on collision with a guy that authorities said was intoxicated illegally in the country. And didn't he have a track record of this as well?
Yes, he had committed crimes up in Colorado years prior to that and never showed up for his court date and, you know, was on the run back and forth over the border. When they apprehended him early 2000s, they took him back up to Colorado to face his charges, and basically he got a slap on the wrist, and he ultimately ended up in Arizona and, killed my son. So, you know, this is a problem we have within our court systems, that our federal judges really take it upon themselves to figure out what kind of a punishment and show leniency so many times to these illegal alien criminals that are present in our country committing crimes and just release them back out onto the streets to continue committing crimes. And that's the case in almost all the Angel family situations. The majority of them have been, you know, have committed crimes prior to killing our loved ones. So, you know, the federal judges and the things that people vote for, you guys need to pay attention of those types of things, and don't just go down a ballot and mark yes, yes, yes. Find out what these judges stand for and how they rule on certain things, because we have to start getting those people out of our court system and make sure they are intent on following our laws and protecting Americans and not deciding how they're going to interpret the laws and let these people go into our country. The separation at the border, I want people to know the majority of the time it's not separating families. It's separating human traffickers and their victims is what's going on at our border. People need to understand that.
Well, at some time when you have states with sanctuary policies or cities with sanctuary policies or the utter refusal to recognize what's happening down at our southern border, they're aiding and abetting those people that end up committing more and more and more serious crimes. And in your three cases, even the death of your loved ones, you know, at some point they bear some of the blame here. I always tend to blame Absolutely. The person that's responsible. But when you're aiding them and you're abetting them and you're supporting them and you're allowing them to continue to be here when they shouldn't be here, at some point there's got to be some culpability. All right, quick break. We'll come back. More at Sabine, Laura, and Maryam Mendoza. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. A lot of breaking developments as it relates to the deep state. Sidney Powell, Greg Jarrett will join us. And as we continue heading into our analysis, more deep state developments this week that are breaking. We'll get to in the next hour. News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. Final thoughts from Sabine Durden and Laura Wilkerson and Maryam Mendoza all lost their kids permanently to illegal immigrants. And we're at the president vetoing of this bill that would prevent his emergency declaration. They can't override the veto. Obviously, they don't have the votes. Sabine, 15 seconds. The president's commitment to this, he seems to be winning. He uses whatever strategy is necessary to win, and he's getting the money.
He's absolutely winning, and he's keeping his promise that he made to each one of us when he said our children didn't die in vain. And he will continue to fight for American lives so they won't know what this feels like when, for me, I lost my only child. Dominic was 30 years old, love of my life. I will never be a grandmother, never have him walk me down the aisle, and no parent should have to deal with this because of an illegal that shouldn't have been here in the first place.
Well said. Sad. Laura.
I think President Trump's doing a great job. I mean, he faces an obstacle every day, all day since he's been there. And I want to just say one last thing. For everyone that wants to say, you know, I'm for border control, but they're lying. They're not for border control. They'll say, I'm for border patrol, but it's not a national emergency. They're lying. I'm for border patrol, but we don't need a wall. They're lying. It's an absolute national, it's absolutely should be the top thing on this is securing our border and making America great again, just like it's, you know, used to be.
All right, Maryam, we give you the last word.
I appreciate our president. He has followed through on his promises to angel parents and securing our country and, you know, following through on his oath to this country to protect Americans, which a lot of our politicians fail to remember. And, you know, I live in Phoenix, Arizona, and these illegals are being bussed in by the thousands every week here into Arizona, thanks to Judge Tigar in the Ninth Circuit Court, who overruled our president trying to keep these people at our borders and have their asylum hearings there. And we are being flooded in the interior of the United States. They're coming into Phoenix to the Greyhound bus station, being shipped everywhere in the United States. And this is thousands of them every week. And people need to wake up and realize this is a national emergency. Support our president because he is protecting us.
So one shot, I think, to get this right. We always get the amnesty. You never get the border wall. You always get the spending increase. You never get the tax cut. It seems like this is the president going all in. I wish some Republicans were as principled as he is. We love you all. Sabine, thank you. Laura, thank you. Maryanne, you're always in our prayers. We wish you and your families the best, as you know. And we will be in touch, and we'll never let up on this story until things get fixed. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Much deep state news will hit that next. And your calls, final hour, free-for-all, and news roundup coming up straight ahead.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload.
All right, news roundup, information overload. Hannity Watch on the deep state, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. So in the last week and a half, we have gotten a boatload of information, all further confirming and more everything we've been telling you about the abuse of power corruption scandal, the biggest in American history. You know, it began when Congressman Doug Collins first released the testimony behind closed doors of Bruce Orr, and how Bruce Orr, fourth highest ranking member of the Justice Department at the time, that Bruce Orr warned everybody about Hillary Clinton's dirty dossier and how it was paid for by Clinton and how it was unverified and not corroborated, and how Christopher Steele was a Trump hater, and then Lisa Page. And then after that, we got testimony from Peter Strzok. And then after that, we got John McCain's aide. That all happened in the last little over a week now. In that testimony, what did we learn? That the FBI was totally and completely handing over the investigation right to the highest levels of the Obama administration. And Lisa Page saying, no, the Justice Department was making all of the decisions, that Hillary Clinton, for example, didn't have to be interviewed alone. That was their decision. Peter Strzok corroborating that point, making the point that it was Loretta Lynch, the same Loretta Lynch who, when Comey mentioned the Clinton investigation, looked at him and said, it's a matter. And basically, Lisa Page even going as far as to say, well, we knew there were all Democrats in the Department of Justice and that that investigation was going to be rigged. We also know that the number one lawyer at the FBI, the general counsel under Comey, James Baker, had recommended that Hillary Clinton be indicted for violating the Espionage Act. That was all stopped because of politics. In other words, the entire investigation was rigged by deep state operatives that had it out for Trump and then had it out and did everything they could do to ensure that Hillary Clinton would be elected president. Well, then we learned some other things about the dirty dossier, and we learned it was never verified. Andrew Weissman was told, by the way, he was in the August meeting with Bruce Orr. He was also at Hillary's victory party. And we learned that, in fact, everybody knew about the dossier. Everybody knew it was bought and paid for. Everybody knew it wasn't verified. Everybody knew Steele hated Trump. And further, we learned that, in fact, Christopher Steele was in contact with the special counsel's office vis-a-vis trying to, even after he's fired for lying and leaking, getting information through the special counsel's to the special counsel's office through Bruce Orr. And then we learned that, you know, for anybody that says, Lisa Page pointed out that there was some type of document that had, quote, vetted the dossier, which we now know would have been a task impossible because Christopher Steele himself, well, he couldn't corroborate the dossier when he was put under oath in that interrogatory down in Great Britain. Now we're getting more information as we speak that Christopher Steele, who created supposedly, although Devin Nunes is now having doubts about that, the anti-Donald Trump dirty Russian dossier, apparently used unverified information himself from the get-go. Information that he found, get this, on a fake news, well, actually, on fake news CNN's website, where users generated their own content. He actually told that to a court last year, that Steele, testifying in the defamation lawsuit filed by a Russian entrepreneur, said that he obtained the information about one of this guy's companies on something called CNN iReport. The lawsuit was dismissed in December. As Fox News has noted, CNN iReport, which is now apparently out of service, invited members of the public to submit their own content. Citizen journalism. Gee, that there's a real source to put in a phony dossier. And the views and the content on the site are solely those of iReport contributors. CNN makes no guarantees about their content or coverage or their veracity or truthfulness. I mean, that is a huge discovery. That's how, not even sloppy. This is just made out of whole cloth what he's admitting here. You know, user generated. It's like going online and looking at the comments people make about articles when people are pretty outrageous and saying, yeah, that's got to be true. Let's put it in a dossier. We learned that not only was Christopher Steele paid by Hillary and the money that Hillary controlled at the DNC, but also a Russian oligarch and the FBI. Not a bad job if you can make up lies and get paid from four separate sources for the same lies. And we also know that the dossier, again, never verified, it would be impossible to verify, was used as the bulk of information to spy on the Trump campaign and a conspiracy that led to committing fraud on the FISA court on multiple levels, especially not telling the FISA court who paid for the dirty Russian dossier and then not telling the court that they never verified it. And then the dossier is used as a backdoor into the Trump campaign when they get the FISA warrant against Carter Page. And then it goes from there. And then Trump wins, and then the insurance policy kicks in. And that is what? 9 months of investigation. They had no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, according to Page and Strzok. But then the appointment of the special counsel anyway, because they were angry that Jim Comey was, in fact, fired, which Jim Comey admitted he had the right to do himself. Anyway, joining us now is Greg Jarrett, author of the number one bestseller, The Russian Hoax. Sidney Powell, attorney, author of the bestseller, License to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Thank you both for being with us.
Our pleasure.
Sidney, you look at these the release of these testimonies last week, and now you look at this interrogatory a little bit more closely, and you begin to see, you know, a guy like Comey signs off on the FISA warrant in October, but tells Trump in January before he's inaugurated that it's salacious and unverified, the opposite of what he said to the FISA court judges back in the day.
Yeah, Sean, it's just confirming what we've known all along, and I think we're going to have to go back to Comey giving illegal access to the raw NSA data collection system to three private contractors, one of whom I would bet money was Fusion GPS. That's one of the things we need unredacted from Rosemary Collier's decision of about a year ago, where she scolds the FBI. It goes back at least to 2015, if not before, and I would just bet money that Fusion GPS was mining that database for whatever they wanted in terms of political opposition research, and that's part of where the information came, that Fusion GPS generated most of what is the Steele dossier and then simply laundered it through Christopher Steele and other people to get pieces of it coming from different places, to appear to come from different places, to go to the FBI to make up that dossier.
Well, it's, and Devin Nunes very interestingly suggested to me in an interview that Steele may have never even written the report. Greg Jarrett?
Yeah, I don't think he did. Well, I don't think he did.
Why not?
I wrote that in a chapter in my book, that experts on Russian affairs have looked at this, and it says it has some of the language that Russians use in disinformation. So either they fed it or they helped to compose it. But one thing's for sure, if I had to identify three villains in the Russia hoax, it would be Hillary Clinton's campaign. And, you know, they always try to keep her fingerprints off it, but she was behind it. And Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele. Steele and Simpson, having been funded by Hillary, were peddling this fake dossier all over Washington, D.C. and New York to ABC, New York Times, Washington Post, Yahoo, CNN, Mother Jones, BuzzFeed, New Yorker. The list goes on and on. You've got roughly, you know, more than a dozen journalists who are being fed a phony, false, fabricated document, and they're feeding it to the FBI, and they're and then you have Hillary Clinton allies like Sidney Blumenthal and Cody Scheer getting into the act. They take the dossier, they write their own second dossier based on it, and they start peddling it to the FBI. And then you've got John McCain's top aide, David Kramer. He flies over to London, meets with Steele, gets his hands on the dossier. He's peddling this thing to journalists. He's peddling it to the FBI. And none of it was true. It was all made up.
The thing is look at how far this made-up dossier went. Now, Sidney, I know you've been critical of Andrew Weissmann, and you know his work behind Enron and the Merrill executives he put away and losing 9-0 in the Supreme Court and losing tens of thousands of jobs and losing an appeal in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. He was up to his eyeballs. How does a guy that's at Hillary Clinton's victory party get appointed by Mueller? How does another woman who represented Clinton on the Clinton Foundation, Jeannie Ray, how does she get appointed? And what would you expect we can anticipate with Mueller's whatever report he comes out with whenever he's going to come out with it?
Well, his report's going to be totally tainted. Weissmann can make giving your mother a Christmas present sound like a criminal offense, and that's what I'm going to expect the report to read like. He'll cherry-pick pieces of information and put them where he wants in the chronology to make something sound bad that isn't.
But I have a question. We do have Russian collusion. Why didn't Mueller show any interest in a phony, bought-and-paid-for Russian dossier of Hillary Clinton that was used to get inside the Trump campaign in an opposition party in an election year by Democrats and then further used to disseminate false and propaganda and information to the American people before the vote to similarly influence those votes.
Because Rod Rosenstein wouldn't let him do it.
Mueller is a very important part of the insurance policy. If they didn't have this special counsel investigation going, it would have been all over for them. This was crucial because it's been the tail wagging the dog of the Department of Justice. Mueller's been able to hold up any valid investigation of any of the wrongdoing. He's been able to cover up God only knows what, including deleting all the Peter Stroke text messages on Stroke's special counsel cell phone and Lisa Page's special counsel cell phone. He's been able to stop Huber's investigation. He's been able to stop the IG investigation. Everything had to stop because of Mueller. And Andrew Weissman, undoubtedly, along with Rosenstein, had a hand in picking Mueller to be special counsel.
Well, these people have known each other and, you know, they've been flying in the same circles all these years. But what about all these people that tell me, Hannity, you're wrong about Mueller? He's a man of integrity.
No.
He's used to be a Marine.
No. Mueller's been protecting and promoting Weissman for more than 20 years, and there's new evidence out just in the last week of Weissman literally threatening to indict anyone that wanted to talk to any defendant in the Enron litigation, threatening to increase their sentences if they spoke to any defendant in the Enron litigation, information that he managed to get sealed for the last 20 years. Information of his other wrongdoing in those cases has gone mysteriously missing.
So, in other words,
one thing after the other.
Now, you had found and you put in your book information that, in fact, Andrew Weissman withheld exculpatory evidence and was excoriated by a judge. Which case was that?
That was the Merrill Lynch Enron case where the Fifth Circuit found that he and Catherine Rumler, who became Obama's White House counsel, and Matthew Friedrich, who became acting assistant attorney general for the criminal division, plainly suppressed evidence favorable to the defense in the Merrill Lynch Enron case while they sent four Merrill Lynch executives to prison for up to a year on an indictment that they had made up a crime in.
Unbelievable. What do you think, Greg? I mean, we know there's no collusion, so they don't have anything. I mean, it seems like I have to guess based on the fact that, you know, they ignored all the real collusion in this story. I think now that is beginning to unfold. I think those people that used the phony dossier of Clinton, those people that protected her from certain indictment, I think those people that tried to bludgeon Trump with lies and with this phony witch hunt, I think a lot of them are going to be held accountable before all is said and done. Am I wrong?
Well, I think you're right. And the question is, should there be, as Lindsey Graham argues, a special counsel to investigate the corruption at the FBI and the Department of Justice in both the Clinton case as well as the Trump investigation that was based on nothing but a hoax? Or should it be handled by the new attorney general, William Barr, appoint a select group of top prosecutors to present evidence in front of a grand jury? But I am confident that if either one of those things happen, that people like Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and the list goes on will likely be prosecuted for a variety of felonies.
Do you agree with that, Sidney?
Yes, I do. The only way to restore the rule of law and any sense of integrity and fairness to the system is to hold everyone accountable for the cover-up and the botched investigations and all the atrocities they've committed against the courts and the country writ large.
You think we're going
to
hear from those FISA judges?
On the rule of law. Yes, I think we should.
Yeah, how does it take 2 years to hear from them? All right, we'll watch. We'll wait. We'll see. And is it going to be a dud, the Mueller report, or is it going to be, innuendo Mueller report?
I think it's going to be chock full of innuendo.
But no.
Yeah, I agree.
No,
I agree.
There.
Well, no, there's no there, but they'll engage in elaborate storytelling that will be nothing more than something that should rest on a fiction bookshelf.
Wow.
Exactly.
All right, thank you both. 800. Do you guys trust the new attorney general real quick, Sidney? Do you think he'll do his job?
I think so.
What do you think, Greg?
I'm willing to give him the chance to do his job. He has a record of doing it. Let's hope he does it here.
All right, quick break. When we come back, wide open telephones, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program, right to the phones when we get back on this busy breaking news Monday, straight ahead. Hannity tonight at 9. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. All right, let's get some calls in. I got complaints last week. Take more calls. You're not taking enough calls. And Linda talks too much. Why does Linda interrupt you all the time?
Who said that?
I'm just making it up.
Yeah,
just
I want that person to call. I want to talk to them personally.
You want to talk to that person? You want that person to call?
Oh, yeah, right, why don't you call in? This is a call-in show.
Call
I look
in.
Forward to talking to that person.
Chad is, well, this is something I know we both agree on. We both love Rocky movies. Chad is in Midland, Florida, I believe. Midland, Texas, of course. How are you, Chad? Glad you called. And in 10 years, I'm really sorry. All the oil industry in Midland is going to be shut down. And I'm sorry that you don't have to worry, though, because you'll have more time for art rather than working.
That's funny, Sean. Thank you for taking the call. It's always great to speak with you. But the good thing about here in Midland, Texas, is we have one regulator, main one, and that's Texas Railroad Commission, and they let it loose out here. But you keep up with the oil and gas, so that's great to hear. I have one talking point and something fun, good to say about New York City right after the talking point. You and Linda play the cut from Rocky Balboa quite often, and there's one.
You mean what you're talking about? You mean the speech between the father and the son?
Yes, and that when you guys play it, and it really hits home, I think, for a lot of people. But the other night,
hits home for me. Nothing hits as hard in life. Got to keep moving.
Well,
keep moving. That's
why don't we just play the cut so everybody knows what we're talking about?
Right, let's play the cut.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows.
Nope.
It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
That's a powerful scene.
It really is. Last week, without even hearing it, it made me think about it. And the one specifically, it doesn't matter how hard you hit, but how hard you get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and moving forward. It hit me all of a sudden. That is our president, Donald Trump. As much as he gets hit every single day, I mean, you talk about it every day. He gets hit every second, minute, hour, every day. He gets hit. We've heard it all, you know, seen the movie, heard the quote all the time, and it just hit me that's Donald Trump. In today's world, no one would ever think that the president of the United States, which is the leader of the free world, would get ridiculed and hit by his own, I don't want to say country, but a certain group in his country. And it's really sad. That's my one main talking point. But last week, my son and I were in New York City last week, and we had an amazing time. We saw Fox News, the building. It was really great. As bad as the tax issue is and the abortion.
As bad as it is, yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad, but go ahead. I'm glad you got to see Fox. I mean, people come all the time to see it.
It was amazing. We had such an amazing time. You know, my son was like, everybody honks about here. Like, you got to move and talk fast. You can't hold nobody up or whatever. So it was really great. I didn't run into any Fox people outside the building, but it was really, really, really good. And but the main thing was the quote that you and Linda play. Y'all just played it. It just hit me that that's our president, Donald Trump. And as much criticism as he has, I think he has a lot more supporters than criticism. But people
life is not sunshine, rainbows, and cotton candy. It's just not. And I know it's not designed to be cotton candy and rainbows. You know, everybody. Now, you might look at it from a financial point of view. Rich people have it easy. They don't have any problems. It's a bunch of crap. It's just garbage. Everybody has issues and struggles and challenges and obstacles in life. And I think Sylvester Stallone just captures it with saying, you know, it's not sunshine and rainbows. It's a matter about how hard you get hit, because nothing will hit harder than life itself. But it's about seeing how hard you get hit and keep on moving. You know, we just talked to Angel Moms in the last hour. You know, I can't think of a harder punch in life than to lose a child. I just can't. And I've watched people crumble and never recover. And I've watched, like, the people we had on, they somehow find the inner fortitude and strength that I don't even imagine I would have. And they stand themselves up and they keep pushing forward, and they have, you know, channeled that pain and that misery and on that unhappiness into trying to prevent other people from ever experiencing that which nearly destroyed them. Same with, you know, some drug addicts. I mean, the ones that get through, so many of them want to spend the rest of their lives teaching those that haven't gotten through, haven't gotten off, how to save their lives before it's too late. Anyway, good call. Appreciate it. Back to our busy phones. Larry is in Columbus. Larry, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Yo, Adrian. I mean, how do you
Adrian,
follow Sylvester
Stallone? Adrian, we did it.
Yeah. How do you follow Sylvester Stallone, right? I mean, I wanted to thank you for many things. I'm a Jewish American. I want to thank you for your support of Israel. I want to tell you that many of us are. I used to be a Democrat. We're not anymore, and you'll see a lot more of that happening.
Let me say one thing about this, because I'm worried about Israel. They got a vote. How many weeks is the vote? About a month away?
April 9th is election day.
April 9th is the vote in Israel. Prior to Donald Trump, for so many years, there's been one courageous Churchillian voice of moral clarity on the world stage that understood radical Islamists, understood terrorism, understood, because they've lived under this. You know, when I go to Sderot in Israel at the Gaza border, when I was there during the last war, what was that, 2014, I think, and we go into the tunnels and we go to Sderot and we're out with the IDF and, you know, I see a bomb blow up, you know, half a mile from where I am, and I watch the Iron Dome, and you look at the history from 48, 67, 73, and you see Israel surrounded, this little tiny country the size of New Jersey, surrounded by enemies. And one of the good things that has emerged is that Bibi now has an ally who also understands radical Islamists. Hamas's charter calls for the destruction of Israel. Iran constantly saying they want to wipe Israel off the map. And that election, you know, the idea that Israel, that they're making such a big deal about cigars. I've been to the prime minister's house. It is shockingly, it looked like a New York two-bedroom apartment to me. There is absolutely no pomp and circumstance. It's nothing like that. It's not ostentatious in any way. And, you know, what are you supposed to do? Give back the cigars? All right, we'll give you back the cigars. And they've turned this into nothing. You know, it would be like getting rid of Churchill in our time. That's how bad it would be. Anyway, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you know, most Israelis are very supportive of Trump, and I think that you're worried about it. I think that they're going to make the right decision. They know what's at stake there. I mean, I have a personal friend in Sderot, and he's had his house, he's sleeping downstairs, his upstairs was bombed. He had to fix his backyard a month ago because a missile hit it, so he's moving out of there. But I called originally because I'm actually without mentioning names, I'm at a trade show in the T-shirt industry, and I'm having customers tell us that they cannot even get anybody, for example, in California, will not even print Second Amendment shirts for them, Trump shirts, or anything. They are so crazy, and the censorship that is happening now is so crazy that thank God that you and a few other voices out there, not enough, are letting us know what's happening. I mean, the left in Israel is the same as the left is here. They're all nuts.
Well, I got to tell you, it's you know, the same arguments, the same battles, the same conflicts. But this election's important. This election now, I mean, you saw the rockets fired last week. You saw Bibi's response. And you need a strong leader that understands the nature of this enemy. And one of the shocking things is when I went into those tunnels, I think it was 2014, during the last conflict, and that's all Israeli cement and electricity that was supposed to be used for hospitals and schools and for people, and it's just wasted. And, you know, we've chronicled the indoctrination even of children with cartoons to, quote, hate Israel, hate the Jews. You see this rise of anti-Semitism around the world, Europe, the United States, these radicals, just, it's scary. Anyway, I'll give you the last word.
Sure. Netanyahu was the right man at the right time, because you might view Iran as the biggest issue, which I do, but he was also 8 years of a very hostile president, and he stood his ground, he fought back, and now, really, Trump is probably the best president ever. You could argue about his tweets and all that kind of stuff, but he's been awesome, and the Israelis appreciate it, and hopefully Netanyahu
wins. I think the next big issue needs to be the Golan Heights for me, which is Israel's. And I think an American president supporting that, the only two people that I think can get that done would be President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. Because you need securable borders, period. You can't be surrounded by enemies like this. I also think there is an emerging opportunity to thread a needle like we've never had before. And because everybody sees the real danger of the Iranian regime and understands that if they don't unite and share intelligence and have a joint defense, that it could all end up badly. And that would be the United States, Israel, the Saudis, the Egyptians, Jordanians, the Emirates. If they align against Iranian hegemony, the region will be saved, and not allowing Iran to ever have a nuclear weapon. The mullahs in Iran will use it. It's almost a guarantee. We cannot let that moment arise. And the people that would be strongest in that situation would be President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. All right. Thank you, sir. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Joe in LJ. Joe, how are you?
Sean, great show. Sean, I think all those 12 people that voted against Trump need to be primaried, along with any other people that do not support Trump, any other politician. We've got to get the Republicans behind Donald John Trump. He's the best president in history, and I'm sick and tired of these Republicans like Marco Rubio not supporting President Trump.
Well, I didn't like the vote either. The good news is they won't override the veto, and the president wins. Winning is what matters. Let's say hi to Joseph in Biloxi in Mississippi. What's up, Joseph? How are you?
Sean, how you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You know, I was listening to the show the other day, Friday.
Thank you.
And I love the show. I love you. You're fantastic. I love
Thank
the job
you.
You're doing. You're doing a great job. But I've noticed not one person has hit on this point. You know, all this fentanyl that's coming across the border. What does it take to be considered a weapon of mass destruction?
Yeah, now, fentanyl. Listen, you take the equivalent of 3 grains of salt out of your salt shaker. That's and you instead of salt, it's fentanyl. That's enough to kill a 250-pound healthy guy. And they're lacing.
Yes, sir.
They're lacing these drugs to, quote, give the kids even a bigger high. Problem is, you're basically playing Russian roulette, and you're going to die if you use this garbage. That's how bad it is.
Well, we've got so much problem with the border and all this pushback. Why can't we use the Patriot Act and consider it a weapon of mass destruction?
Well, look, if you can't look at the fentanyl issue, the heroin issue, if you can't look at the human trafficking, even young girls into prostitution, and then you can't look at the homicides, sexual assaults, and violent assaults, and the cartels and gangs organized to do such, and if these drones are being flown over the United States to find the perfect way to sneak in drugs and do some human trafficking, and we can't even take them out of the sky, then, you know, we're not being smart. Building the wall will stop the vast majority of it. Similarly and simultaneously, you got to also have the other equipment that will identify drugs at the port of entries. I mean, because, yeah, some of it's happening there. And you need the manpower. You need the latest equipment. You need to watch for underground tunnels. You need to, you know, every bit of this needs to be secure. We have the ability to do it. We've proven, you know, Yuma, Arizona, for example, 5.5 miles of fencing. You turn it into, you know, 70 miles of fencing, and that entire area gets shut down, done. And, you know, we owe it to the country. How many kids have to die of a heroin overdose? 300 a week before we say enough is enough. Yeah, it's a national emergency. That wraps things up for today. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Huge, more breaking news as now the onion is ready to be completely unraveled as it relates to the deep state. Hannity Watch on the border. We investigate both global warming and crazy Robert Francis Beto Bozo O'Rourke, all coming up tonight. Hannity, Glenn Beck, Devin Nunes, Mark Meadows, Pam Bondi, and more on the Fox News Channel.